Hi, I'm Laura Stratton. I work for the Bixby Center of Global Reproductive Health at UCSF. And I'm going to be presenting today on provider HIV and pregnancy prevention practices specific to the female condom in Southern Africa. And I'll be presenting data that we collected from two national probability surveys in South Africa and in Zimbabwe over 2008 and 2009. So as your presenter, I don't have any relationships to disclose. The objectives of this presentation are to identify provider counseling practices for the female condom in South Africa and Zimbabwe, and to investigate the provider perspective of this female-controlled method of pregnancy and HIV prevention. I'd first like to start off by thanking our research team, without whom this study could not have been possible. We're also grateful for the support of provided by the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development, as well as for the contributions of our survey respondents. So just to give you guys an idea of where our participants live and work, I want to give a brief background on contraceptive use and HIV in both countries. So here we can see which modern contraceptive methods are currently being used by sexually active women, with the injection, the pill, and male condoms being the most common. The use of female condoms in both countries is nearly non-existent. Both South Africa and Zimbabwe have high rates of mistimed or unwanted births, illustrating a further unmet need for contraception. HIV prevalence in both South Africa and Zimbabwe is high, with one in three women being HIV positive. In South Africa, prevalence peaks in women aged 25 to 29, and in Zimbabwe, the peak is slightly in older women, 30 to 34. So this map illustrates where South Africa and Zimbabwe are within the African continent, and you'll notice that both countries are colored in dark red, indicating HIV prevalence rates of over 15%, according to the UNAIDS 2008 Global Report. In South Africa, women have higher HIV prevalence rates than men at nearly every age group. Unfortunately, the same is true in Zimbabwe. So clearly, women need HIV prevention methods that work and are both available and acceptable. So the overall study objective was to assess the prevention practices and healthcare providers who serve women at risk of unintended pregnancies in a high HIV prevalence settings. We wanted to know what our healthcare providers were doing with regard to helping these women prevent both HIV and unwanted pregnancy. The study involved national probability surveys of physicians and nurses providing family planning and HIV-STI prevention services. It was part of a larger study using in-depth interviews and survey research to look at provider prevention practices in Zimbabwe, South Africa, and in the United States. We received ethical approval for this research from the IRBs at each of our study sites. So we used a multi-stage facility-based approach in which first districts and then facilities within those districts and then finally clinicians within those facilities were selected. All clinicians offering family planning or HIV prevention services at selected facilities were invited to participate in this study. Our facility sample in South Africa included 100 clinics and 30 hospitals selected from 11 districts, and in Zimbabwe, the facility sample included 89 clinics and 56 hospitals from 15 districts. Our clinician sample included a total of 1,970 clinicians. The majority of the clinicians were nurses and slightly more worked in hospitals than in clinics. Clinicians were considered ineligible if they did not provide direct patient care for family planning or STI prevention services, did not work at one of our selected facilities, or were retired or deceased. In South Africa, we recruited clinicians from 29 hospitals and 87 clinics, and in Zimbabwe, clinicians were recruited from 46 hospitals and 84 clinics. We had high participation rates at the facility level. Clinics and hospitals were, for the most part, open to allowing our researchers in to interview their staff. We had 73% response rate amongst our clinicians with a total of 1,444 respondents. It should be noted that during our study recruitment, healthcare providers were on strike in South Africa, and Zimbabwe was in the middle of political and social turmoil. And despite that, we still managed to get 614 participants in South Africa and 830 in Zimbabwe. And I think that just speaks to our dedicated research team in those two countries. So we developed a questionnaire for either self-administration by the clinicians themselves or by administration over the telephone, and the survey included questions on clinician practices for patients at high risk of HIV and pregnancy, including HIV-positive and at-risk women. Our survey respondents were mostly nurses, with only 9% being physicians. Nearly two-thirds of the respondents reported having received training in family planning, and 80% reported being trained in HIV and STI prevention. Nearly all of the clinicians surveyed reported seeing patients with the greatest need for HIV and pregnancy prevention, including HIV-positive and at-risk women, adolescents, women needing contraception, and low-income women. So according to our surveyed clinicians, of course, they are all doing everything that they can to counsel their patients on condom use, pregnancy, and HIV and STI prevention. We do acknowledge the role that social desirability may have played into these high numbers, however. 88% of our clinicians reported currently offering female condoms to their patients, a similar percentage to those offering oral contraception and the injection, two methods that have much higher rates of use and acceptability among the women in these two countries. 92% consider the female condom to be an appropriate contraceptive for women at HIV, at risk of HIV, while very few consider the highly effective contraceptives, apart from the injectable, as appropriate. Views were similar for HIV-positive women. While clinicians report usually are always discussing female condoms with their HIV-positive female patients, only 55% reported doing so with their adolescent teenage patients. Overall, clinicians had higher rates of discussing male condoms with their patients than female condoms. So even though our clinicians are counseling their patients on the female condom and offering female condoms, patients just aren't using them. Data from our in-depth interviews with clinicians show the typical reasons for dislike of the female condom. Female condom is not easy. It really is not user-friendly. Female condom, you need cooperation between the two of you to use it. We are already struggling with the female condom because of the noise. And then lastly, this quote points to potential for improvement. If the female condom on development will be more comfortable and easier to use, ... So, clinicians recognize the need for female-controlled prevention methods. Almost half of the clinicians rank the need for discrete contraceptive and HIV prevention methods as being of high importance. They also acknowledge the role male partners play in a woman's ability to use contraception. 95% ask their patients about male partner support or opposition to contraceptive use. Clinicians also recognize the need for the development of new female barrier methods for HIV and STI prevention. So in summary, the DHS data from Zimbabwe and South Africa show that female condom use is nearly non-existent despite high rates of HIV. However, our survey found that the majority of healthcare providers in these two countries both offer female condoms to their patients and routinely include it in contraceptive counseling. Southern Africa continues to face high rates of HIV, and women bear the brunt of this disease, with higher rates of infection than men at almost every age group. Unfortunately, the development of new HIV prevention technologies has been slow. One proven method of HIV prevention, the female condom, exists, yet has very low rates of acceptability and use. And I think this points to the fact that even highly effective methods, if they have product attributes that don't agree with the population that they're being targeted for, they're just not going to be used. And that's, I think, what we're seeing here with the female condom. And there is a new female condom, the FC2, which has been released and is made of nitrile rather than latex and is significantly cheaper than the old female condom. And the FC2 has been approved for USA distribution. So despite the fact that the female condom is a visible method and cannot be used discreetly by women, it does have advantages in that it's currently recognized by healthcare providers and has already been integrated into contraceptive counseling practices. The providers in our survey reported that they would welcome an improved female barrier method and training on that method should one become available. Our survey results suggest that healthcare providers understand the urgency of the need for effective and acceptable methods of HIV prevention, and that they will play an important role in the introduction of new barrier methods should one become available. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and you've given us a little time for any questions or comments on the last several, or really the last presentations, all of the presentations. You have a just maybe a brief thing on what the female condom too, why is it better? Is it?
It's made out of a different product. It's not made out of latex, it's made out of nitrile, which is significantly cheaper to produce, and so it's going to be available at a lower cost to the user.
And less decibels on use?
And then I think also in COVID, it maybe transmit heat better, so it might be more comfortable for you.
Okay. A question back here.
Two things. You spent a lot of the time in the presentation talking about some of the supply side barriers and how those were addressed, a little bit less on the demand side, and I just wanted to understand a little bit better if you could offer a little bit more information about how women and men were reached outside of this clinic setting. That wasn't entirely clear to me. And also wondered if as part of the monitoring efforts done with this initiative, you did indicate that a potential future barrier might be an increased cost since these methods were offered at a subsidized price. So I wonder if overall you did any cost analysis of this program and what the impact for sustainability of that in the public sector would be.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. Trying to do that and make it a little bit more sustainable, but the idea isn't that they're